Welcome back to Beyond the Booth. I'm your host, Cameron Capers, and as always, follow Beyond the Booth on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. You can also find Beyond the Sound on Twitter and Instagram at BYDTHESOUND. Today, my guest is Marcus Harley, but he goes by Swami Sam. How you doing?
Yo, it's good. How you doing?
Nothing much, man. I'm doing well. So I wanted to just kind of start off. I was reading that you were born and raised in the Bronx. Yeah. And I read that your cousin taught you to play bass, and that was kind of your entry point to playing music. And then you also mentioned how you were listening to a lot of alternative rock at the time. And I was interested, who were some alternative rock bands that kind of grabbed your attention around the same time you were learning how to play bass?
Yeah, my cousin and I, we're very into, it's kind of like weird. I had a bit of a thought recently about what was distinguished as alternative music, per se. Like, a lot of sources say that alternative music lied therein, like rock bands who had alternative lyrical content, whether it be Christian or something like that. I think it was like under bands who had either religious or more progressive like undertones. But for a while, I considered the alternative rock bands that I really messed with, like, to be Three Days Grace, Linkin Park. We were big Linkin Park fans, like Evanescence. It's like the standard emo black kid kind of band.
Right. Yeah, I was just asking because when I was reading that, it just reminded me a lot of myself. Because growing up, my brother and I listened to like everything. So around middle school, we listened to a lot of rock and alternative rock. And it was just so crazy how like we went to a predominantly white school. So people would be like, oh, like rock music is for white people. And I was just like, no, I just like it. Like I didn't really, consider like race or anything. So it's interesting you brought up the whole idea of what is alternative music. Because I feel like it's more subjective than just, the cut and dry answer of like, the stereotypical white guys, an alternative band. So I think it's a little bit deeper than that. So I was reading that your EP, It Is What It Is, which I'll touch on a little bit later, was inspired by a trip you took to Nairobi, which I thought was really interesting. Can you just talk about that trip in general and how the culture there influenced the project?
Yeah, I think very fondly of like my trip to Nairobi. And that was almost a whole year ago, and I was only recently thinking about the vibes then and just how important it was to for me especially to visit such a place and sort of tap in musically. I think I didn't really go in with much of an expectation as to what and how my sound was just going to show itself and express itself, but also interact with the sound already there. And it was like quite my surprise to see such a home in music for Kenyans, especially, and like people, citizens of Nairobi and the Nairobi like music scene in general. I think it wouldn't have been without, my close collaborator then, Mao, but also interacting with Mr. Liu, who I just regard as a genius in their own right. Just seeing how the language of music production was just very refreshing to interact with different producers there and other musicians, because it is like, I would admit that being in New York and being a part of a specific kind of scene, especially like coming out of school, just seeing that there were, other kinds of producers rather than everyone or mostly kind of the people that I went to school with sort of crafting a very long weighted either pop music or like hip hop. And so it was just refreshing to see how other people work and what kinds of sounds that they encourage themselves to make.
Right.
What references they use and what kind of reverence they're paying in the music that they make. And
No, I definitely get that. And it's crazy because when I first started listening to your music, it was that EP. And I didn't even know about the entire backstory about you taking a trip there. And so when I first heard the EP and listening to it, I could definitely hear a lot of like African like undertones, and like it was very like summery and light. And so yeah, to read that story about you taking that trip just kind of brought that EP full circle around for me, because right. I didn't even know the entire backstory, like I said. And so I thought that was really cool. And over the past few years, I've been reading books about different types of black music, and it's crazy how the roots of percussion or rhythm can be traced all the way back to Africa. So right. once again, you know, listening to this EP, it was just like, it made me want to research more about, you know, our roots and the history of black music. Mm-hmm. And so with these influences around, were they around you before you took that trip, or is that like the first time you were really exposed to like African influences in that way?
I was lucky to take a class, like during school. It was in my sophomore year. It was, I think it was, I forgot the name of the class, but we primarily focused on, you know, post-colonial African music, and mm-hmm. just like finding like the roots of you know, different not necessarily genres, but different musical cultures within Africa, like Rai, Algerian music, Musulu. That's like the class where I learned about Fela Kuti when I tapped into Afrobeat primarily. So that was a couple years ago when I was exposed to African music, both as a culture and an evolving presence in modern music, and but also like a participant in music as it was evolving then, but also right. as a root of popular music now, but also popular music, you know, then, as I already said.
That's really interesting. And you just said that how it's kind of shifted and it's changing, you know, with the culture and the time. Yeah. And I think a good example is that was recently Beyonce released that Black is King, you know, film. And there was mm-hmm. a lot of African influences in that. And that was, mm-hmm. I feel like for a lot of people, the first time seeing, you know, African influences like in their face like that on that big of a level. And I know there was some controversy around it. I think, I don't want to get into details because I don't know everything, but I think it was like, it was based in East Africa, but they weren't working with East African musicians. I don't want to, you know, say the wrong thing. It was something like that. But I still doesn't take away from, you know, the project. It was still really good in my opinion. But yeah, I just do think it's interesting how black forms of music have mm-hmm. kind of shifted and changed over time, but still kind of have those roots. And so, yeah, that's really cool. Yeah. I've been following you on Instagram for a while. And something that's really intriguing to me is you have a lot of different pieces of equipment I've never seen before that you make music with. And I'm just like, whoa, like, what is this stuff? And so DJs and producers are so brilliant to me because you could argue DJing producing is almost a science in a way. Mm-hmm. And so what are some of your favorite pieces of equipment that you use when you're writing?
Right. So, right now I like to refer my workspace as the cockpit. And as you were just saying that, my niece just came over and now she just fell asleep on my shoulder. So I've got her.
That's adorable.
I've got her on my lap right now. She's two, and she loves music too. But as far as like writing, but also crafting, my favorite pieces really, I was actually having a conversation with a photographer, Pierre Fergus, the mm-hmm. other day, just about how my particular style of, well, my style in particular, and like the things that I buy and the clothes that I purchase, but also the equipment that I get, is very tied into things that have so much expression in a appearance sense, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
It's just like being able to look at something, but also trust that the tactile nature of something can inspire me so forth to make something that is both eclectic, but also resonates with me as a person. So in particular, one of my favorite piece to work with, and it's not that I have a whole bunch of like pieces, but I work primarily with Teenage Engineering's OPZ.
Okay.
It was actually my second piece that I got. I got the OPZ just one day after tweeting, should I get the OPZ? And then I got
very straightforward story.
Yeah, the turnaround was pretty funny. And so, you know, I come back with the OPZ. I'm like, yo, this is cool. Like the first day I got it, I didn't even know how it worked. It didn't even turn on, but I managed to figure it out. Right. Just a whole bunch of YouTube videos. But the OPZ is a really interesting device for me to use because I treat it both as a sketchbook, but also the sort of membrane as to how I like get my ideas going in the computer.
That's interesting.
Like my original purpose behind, you know, buying music equipment and gear that inspires me was to be able to go outside and use these products rather than only being able to use it indoors. So the OPZ is definitely portable. I got the OP1 following that, which is like just its own portable like workstation. I have two pocket operators, which I just, you know, walk around, make a beat, sample anything, like go right in. So
yeah, I was gonna ask you about one of those. I think it was like a Street Fighter.
I got the Street Fighter one. So,
that's really cool.
It was so sick when I found out about it. I got tingles. I was like, "Dang, yeah, the Capcom like." My family's we're really big on Street Fighter and fighting games in general. I wish they made like a Tekken one or or like a Dragon Ball. If they like made a Dragon Ball, like
they would make a ton of money off of that.
I wouldn't even be able to buy one.
That's right.
But yeah, I definitely I trust in accessibility, inspiration, design, and also expression in the things that I get, and it definitely makes creating easier. But also just serves as an aesthetic experience, you know, when I'm posting on Instagram or whatever. I have a really huge attention to detail.
That's really interesting you brought that up. It's like how the way we market things and present things can change people's perspective about the product overall. And I think that's really interesting how social media has really just changed music in general. And obviously there's good and bad, which we'll touch on that a little bit later. Yeah. But recently I did an interview with Aaron Alexander. He's a rapper based here in Kansas City. And we were actually talking about anime, how it inspired some of his past work. And I read that you're a huge anime fan, and some of my friends have been getting me into it over the past year or so.
Yeah.
I've been watching Seven Deadly Sins on Netflix, and it's a really interesting show. And I just wanted to ask you, do you have any recommendations? And either in the past or now, has anime ever like directly affected you as a musician, how you make music, and just overall in any way?
Well, so back to the conversation just about my cousin teaching me bass, like while we were listening to all these alternative bands, we were just huge on Adult Swim anime. So we came up on like Tsubasa, like the original Fullmetal Alchemist, XXHolic, Hunter x Hunter, like the older one.
Right.
Like Dragon Ball, like that's how we came up. And then we also had Code Geass then, but as far as a recommendation goes, I would say keep Code Geass. Definitely watch that one because
You might just send me how to spell that.
CODEGEASS.
Okay, that sounds familiar. Actually, I feel like I've seen that somewhere.
Yeah, it's definitely like one of the top. So as a kid, I wasn't so super into mecha anime, and the whole thing about like a lot of the Adult Swim anime is that they tend to be a little bit cerebral rather than action based. So you know, as a kid, you can't really expect to be into it. That also goes for like Death Note and like Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex, but. During early in the quarantine, I saw that Code Geass was on Netflix, and then I tapped in, and I absolutely loved it. And it was more of a tactics anime, and I enjoy those a lot because it's almost like reading a book rather than watching a show. That helps you sort of like think, or even just like don't expect anything. Like don't like your expectations, they really fall short every time, you know, a character will pull something out. But right. then, you know, you also have those tropes of just like the main character shield and things like that. But I'm not like, I'm super big on anime, but like, I'm not like such a nerd that I'll just try to come for anyone or try to come up with my own doctrine of what anime is the greatest and which ones are the worst based on what they do for their characters.
Right. yeah, and something I've realized about anime, because like I said, I'm pretty objective when it comes to it. I watched a little bit here and there growing up. I wasn't like deep into it, obviously. But something I've noticed is like the way they tell stories is a lot of like kind of bigger than life ideas. It's like humanity and life and death.
Yeah.
And like all these different things. I think that's really interesting because I love to read books. So yeah, anime has definitely drawn me in with that. Like they tell stories that you don't really see a lot. And so I think that's interesting. And I think it's just cool how much anime influences the Black community in different ways. Really, really interesting to me.
Right.
So something I wanted to bring up was you talked about COVID. Obviously, it's been almost a year, which is insane to even say. But something I read you were talking about was just this idea of feeling the need to release content all the time. Mm-hmm. And something that I've been struggling with is this need to feel like I need to be constantly doing the same thing, you know? And I think social media is definitely a symptom of that. And it's almost like COVID and quarantine has almost amplified that to a sense. And as a musician, is that something you've dealt with in the past? And if so, how do you kind of pull yourself out of that mindset?
Right. So like as far as like COVID happening and just as far as like my work ethic in particular, so I put It Is What It Is out in March. Well, no, not March, May. May, July, and it was like, I was like, damn, everyone's putting stuff out because they're in quarantine. But that's not why, like, I did It Is What It Is. I definitely, like, put out that project because it was about time for people to hear some of my music in an official manner.
And right.
The turnout was actually just, like, so incredible, and I'm super grateful, and I love everyone for participating in the project and listening to it and sharing their thoughts and, you know, and whether or not they were inspired by it or if they like decided to, you know, get down with Swami Sound, like from that project alone, like it definitely made a lot of sense for me personally. And as far as Swami Sound during the pandemic, I didn't necessarily feel so much pressure as to, you know, I need to like make a follow-up project or I need to like, you know, release more music. And if we think about it, what I only put out like 4 more songs like 6 months after.
Right.
So like that whole you need to be like putting out a project a month or whatever, you know, that's never like really come across my mind. But I definitely do feel the pressure from a couple of homies that, you know, are putting in work anyway. But not just because it's a quarantine, but more so like that's how you got to get the chicken either way. So
exactly.
I love just, you know, being driven not by the world happening, but more so just because you are happening.
Exactly.
You are alive and you can get straight to the grease, you know? And I definitely, you know, retain like some aspects of that work ethic when I wake up every day. It's like, it's not that. Just because I'm not putting stuff out doesn't mean I'm like not waking up every day and cutting a record every single day.
Exactly. And social media makes you feel like, oh, I have to post something every day and let people know what I'm doing.
Social media is actually really trippy because then it's a lot of people like feeling, and not that like this is actually a big assumption of mine, but I'm going to make it anyway. But there's a big entitlement of other people's activity, what they do, what they say, and like how they live, just because we're all participants of it. And
right.
You know, and it's up to the user to, you know, decide what they want to share or not. But you know, we also exist in real life as well. So
exactly. Like,
I have it's taken me some time to, you know, develop a mature complex as to who I am on the internet versus who I am in real life. Like in real life, I'm just, you know, like a 23-year-old, you know, just got out of college, making music every day, living with my sister. I have 2 nephews and niece, and like I love my family so much. Like, and like, you know, my problems don't really have to exist on the internet. And I think, you know, that's that realization has helped me sort of work towards well-being, but also just my development as a you know, a growing man, you know.
Right. That's really interesting you said that. That's something I've been trying to kind of deal with and figure out, is like, who am I when I'm not on social media, you know? I think a lot of times we want people to see us a certain way, and it's like, yeah, something I've been asking myself a lot recently is like, you know, who am I? Like at 3 o'clock in the morning, no one's looking at me. Like, am I really happy with who I am and like where I'm at? Yeah.
And it's trippy. And I think, you know, one thing we could definitely benefit from is just, you know, like what, something I also realized, I think last week, was just how important it is, you know, to actually like message people and interact with whoever's in your comments section. Mm-hmm. But also like DMing someone, like even with you, I mean, one of our first interactions was actually just because we wanted to play Spellbreak, right?
Exactly.
and it was chill. I was like, oh, this is great. Like, this is exactly why things like this is why, like Instagram or Twitter or something, when people literally message me, say like, hey, what's up? Like, you know, I'm into this. Like, oh, I like this about you. Or do you want to do this? Like, that is something about social media that we've lost touch of, especially mm-hmm. during COVID, because we can't necessarily see each other. But there's almost the expectation, like I said before, the entitlement to, you know, what we need to be sharing. But
exactly,
like, it really like it goes as far as to actually having a conversation with someone. Like, I'm super grateful for you for actually hitting me up to do this, you know, like, and we mm-hmm. wouldn't be able to do this if you didn't hit me up on Instagram.
Exactly. So, right.
I think there needs to be a little bit more real life stuff happening online mm-hmm. rather than online stuff.
No, I definitely know what you mean. Yeah. And like, it's just crazy because this podcast was like, I started it, I think, May of last year. And I was going to wait because of COVID. I was like, oh, I should just wait until things calm down. But this podcast has really been a catalyst for me to just have organic conversations like with these people. Right. And talk about music and just art in general, because I love talking about it and love talking to people that are doing things like you. And it's been great, like a silver lining in a way, you know?
Congratulations.
And no, I appreciate that. And I appreciate you too, because you're so talented. So even talking to me is like, I'm not doing this because we talked and played video games, but I actually think you're talented. I'm a fan of your music. So it's like, you know what I mean? Like, actually having these organic conversations and interactions, and not just, oh yeah, like I'm going to interview this dude just because, you know, whatever. Like, I want to do it because I want to, basically. And right. So, yeah, this is, conversations are important to me, and not just doing it for my blog. I'm doing it because I'm genuinely interested in your process and your point of view.
And I'd be happy to, you know, talk about it more. Just, you know, just lay anything on me, honestly.
No, definitely. Yeah. And I try to, like, when I write questions and make sure they're pertinent to the person I'm talking to and not just this same shell over and over again, because I've seen so many YouTube videos of like these huge radio stations and blogs and stuff, and they just ask the same questions over and over again.
They ask the same things, and sometimes the conversations they have are like kind of invasive, are they not?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And I don't know if you can hear it, but my other nephew's in the back. He likes to, you know, he's 10, and he's doing his thing.
No, I have nephews around his age too, and that's just so crazy to live with them, because all my family's in Ohio. My older brother is the only relative I have here in Missouri, so I'm happy that you're with your family, because yeah, it's definitely hard being away from them, because the whole cliche of kids growing up so fast is so true. I'm the youngest of my mom's kids, so I never had anyone younger than me.
So
watching my nephews and nieces grow up is just like I can't even describe it.
It's like its own kind of experience, and being an uncle is definitely one of the best things to happen.
Same. It just seeing someone like that looks up to you
exactly.
and thinks you hang the moon, you know, that's just such an amazing feeling. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah. What's up?
Sorry. I was just going to say, to talk about the EP some more. Mm-hmm. So once again, it's called It Is What It Is. And it was definitely one of my favorite releases from last year. Because like I said before, I've definitely been going through this like process of like getting anxious some days and just like, you know, mentally just not wanting to do anything. Or being in my own head too much. And this EP has really been therapeutic for me. And I was going to ask, do you listen to Solange at all?
Yeah, I love Solange.
Yeah, this EP actually reminded me of A Seat at the Table in a way. Because she talked about a lot of the songs are really repetitive. And she did that because it was kind of like a therapeutic, you know, almost calming, like just that sense of that repetition, you know. And this EP kind of reminded me of that. Right. And something that stood out to me was you don't really single out on the tracks at all. And I was wondering, was that something you've always planned to do? Was it more of a song by song basis?
I wouldn't mean single out,
like just writing lyrics or just being on the track opposed to just producing.
Right. Yeah. So, the premise behind me as Swami Sound, the interesting thing is that I'm operating as a producer but an artist. Mm-hmm. Almost in the same vein as like Bicep, Disclosure, K-Tronada, like kind of like that.
Right.
And so forth. You know, I've definitely like done my like fair share of work, working with artists, supporting them, engineering for them, holding them down, DJing for them, like at whatever shit they needed me at, producing for them. You know, like I put in a lot of work over the years, and it had a lot to do with like sort of A&R kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And not because I was, you know, looking for clout, you know, as Swami Sound per se, but more so just it's the same vein as, you know, hitting somebody up just to have a conversation with them. This is a it's ordinary magic for me.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And something I noticed is, like just watching your videos on, Instagram and stuff you post, like I can tell that you seem comfortable. And it's not like, oh, I have to post this video, like they're making music, you know, so people can see what I'm doing. I can tell that you really are just engaged in the process and you're not really doing it for other people, which I think is important. Right. I think a lot of times as musicians, we want to like make stuff that people want to hear as opposed to what we want to make. And I think it's really important to be able to separate the two and not just feel like you have to constantly just release stuff that you're not really believe in. And something I can tell about you is that you're definitely doing it like from your own, you know, headspace and not like, oh, I have to do this specific sound.
Right. Right. Yeah. The whole thing behind that, and it's definitely taking years of just like confidence building, but also practice and just like appreciation of myself. There definitely was a point in time where I didn't feel comfortable in expressing like my music, you know, on the internet, you know?
Right.
But also like, if you think about it, I only have relatively like 9 songs out officially.
Right.
But like, there's definitely like been like more music, you know, put out per se. Like, when I started out, and I still want to answer your, initial question was just like, how it doesn't sound like I actually like put time and effort into like developing songs, the songs with like deliberate lyrics and whatnot, me not necessarily being the forefront of the project. It's because, I'm going to pull it all together in this one sentence. Give me a second.
No, you're okay. Take as much time as you want.
It's like, I definitely found the confidence to do this Swami Sound as a musical project through helping other artists. And, you know, to call it help, you know, maybe, you know, pretentious or presumptuous, but I definitely always saw like my work with, you know, my friends as important in empowering them.
Right.
Empowering them as artists, you know, encouraging them, but also figuring out how I can play my part in helping them out.
And exactly.
At a certain point, you know, amongst, you know, all that time and effort that I put in, you know, working with other artists and helping them do their thing, I was doing my thing at the same time, you know, putting in my time, but also like, you know, showing my friends my music and, you know, like their feedback being integral into helping me build the confidence necessary to do what I do now.
Right.
So it is what it is as a project, but also as a musical project that is mine as much as it is the other artists who participated in. It was more so to demonstrate versatility between me and these people that I've managed to like come across, and it's expressive of like just intercontinental sauce. You know what I mean? So like,
you need to coin that term before someone hears this.
No, I definitely got that from Kamau, but
okay.
But it's, yeah, it, like the whole reason why I'm not the forefront of it is like, yo, why do I have to? Mm-hmm. And if I like really wanted to be the forefront of the project, then you know you would have heard it. But I think I am the forefront of the project because I'm no. like I cut those records, I mix them, like
exactly.
Beats, but also, you know, Mr. Liu and Kamau definitely participated in making those beats, don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not always about who does the most work.
Right.
It's never about that.
Exactly.
It's about the spiritual like aspect of making something so beautiful.
I totally agree. And something I'll be 25 in June. Mm-hmm. And over the past few years, something I've been really grappling with is the idea of ego. Mm-hmm. And just selfish, being selfish, and this idea of a lot of people think that they can't do something for themselves musically and also support someone else. And I've seen that a lot, and I don't understand it. And it's like you said, it's when you work with other people, it's just as much theirs as it is yours, but it doesn't take away from you as a, you know, producer and musician.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think it's really important to kind of these conversations and just talk about how ego really can stifle really amazing collaborations from happening, because people just want to be like, oh, I'm just that guy, or I'm that woman, or whatever, and like I did it all by myself. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, that's cool, but it's way more, I think, fulfilling and, like you said, important to the culture in general to work with other people,
right,
and kind of bring different perspectives together. And like I said, listening to your music, I can definitely tell you have that mindset. And I think that's really important to kind of spread that around and talk about it more. Because I cover hip hop, especially. I love, you know, hip hop my entire life. And that's something I've noticed, especially in that genre, is ego is definitely prominent. And almost to an extent, I understand why. But at the same time, I think it could be detrimental. And so, yeah, I think that's your what you just said is really interesting. And I think it rings true for sure. So just as we wind down here, I wanted to talk about what you have planned for this year.
Right.
So when it comes to music, do you think like you have a structure, like I want to do X, Y, and Z, or it'll be like just kind of going with the flow?
Right. Well, before I answer that, like I definitely want to tap into what you said about ego
mm-hmm.
in terms of collaboration. I think a lot of it, you know, is inherently capitalistic, you know, like it's,
oh God,
it's,
this is it's, a different it's, podcast.
It's different podcast, but I'm not going to go so far as how we can dismantle capitalism, because I need to get the money as much as the next dude.
Exactly. Like, it's a really hard position to be in, especially
it's
as
a
black
hard
people.
Position to be in, especially as black people. Exactly. But like a lot of when it really boils down to it, where we do participate in an industry that is highly underpaid. And when we talk about, oh, I did this, I do this, like I produce this whole thing myself, I mix this myself, it comes across as ego specifically. But when we start to distinguish it as ego, we're almost like kind of cutting ourselves down whenever we bring it up. Like our sense of self and our sense of self-efficacy is the first target when it comes to saying you only like you're kind of just like doing this for the money. Like, sure enough, I am doing this project to make a bag to help my family out, to like become the man that I want to become to the people that I love. But like I'm trying my hardest to not just like focus on like how much money I'm making while I'm trying to make mad money, you know?
Exactly. No, that's like, something I've grappled with a lot too, is wanting to dismantle a system that you currently exist in at the same time.
Right. And I don't even have to dismantle it, but like, if I can do it without being a jerk, by all
right. Means. Yeah. Wow. It's like I said, the conversation of the relationship between black people and capitalism is like, I would have to start a separate podcast just to talk about that.
Right.
Because
well,
it is, yeah.
I can be a co-host by all means.
Yeah, we need to do it because, yeah, man, especially, like I said, just in the black community. And it's like, I understand it to an extent. And that's something I've had to like grapple with and sit down with is so many of my dreams and career goals are tied in with capitalism. And like you said, it's not a bad thing because we're born into the system, so we can't just like stand around and not do anything.
Yeah.
But it's also just mentally and spiritually draining a lot of the time to feel right. like your only purpose is just, you know, work for this machine and just get crumbs back, basically. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think these conversations are important, even if we right. don't agree or have the same perspective. Yeah. It's important to talk about in general because a lot of people. Right. Yeah. People just, I think a lot of Black people specifically, and not all of us, obviously. But I think a lot of them care more about Black capitalism as opposed to Black liberation, which is yeah. something I've been trying to figure out where I stand on. And it's like, am I just acting like I want Black liberation just so I can get closer to that money? Or is it like, yeah, it's, it's a lot of layers, so I don't want to get deep into it. But did you listen to 444 at all?
I didn't listen to 444. And I feel okay. like that's because I have my own predilections towards Jay-Z.
That's totally fair. I was just asking because he did, like, I think it was on Tidal. It was videos and it was different actors and musicians talking about ego and do they think they need their ego or not. And it was just really interesting. But yeah, that's a definitely, like I said, an important conversation that needs to continue to be had.
As far as your last question though, as far as my plans go for the year for 2021, I started my YouTube project.
I was going to bring that up actually.
Yeah. So I started a YouTube project because I was contemplating it for a while. One thing that I definitely saw was a deficit of just like, you know, black people, black musicians. Not saying that there aren't black musicians on YouTube. Shout out.
Right.
Shout out to whoever they are. And I seen them, but I can't remember their names. But
no, you're good.
But it's just a lot of the people particularly who demonstrate a lot of like modular gear or just dollless apparel. They don't cover any black facets that I'd like to see.
And, right.
I just like to participate in it, and it's like, and my whole premise isn't about any like absolutism or anything. I just like also want to have fun, but also just like see someone that looks like me just sort of like doing the thing. So
exactly,
people could probably feel comfortable like tapping into it,
definitely.
But also using it as just like my own platform for the things that I like design wise. A lot of time and effort goes into my set design and my filming process, but also like the things that I produce for that.
Right.
I'm lucky to be able to start this YouTube. I'm only 3 videos in and I just broke like 120 subscribers. Like,
congratulations, man.
Thank you. And day by day, I'm like figuring out how to market it a little bit more. This week I took a break because this week was a busy one, but
I understand.
But there's the YouTube project, and what I want to do with the YouTube project is actually just segue into the record that I'm currently working on. Not that I could say much about it, but
no worries. I'm definitely excited to hear. And it's interesting you brought up YouTube. And you said you have a nephew that's 10 years old. I also have a nephew and multiple nephews that are around 10 years old. And I was talking to one of them, my sister's son, and he was like, yeah, I'm on YouTube right now. Like, I'm learning how to code. And I was just like, what? Like, that's so crazy. And him being like a little black kid, that just made my heart like just so warm to hear him say that. Yeah. For him to even have that interest in the first place, but to have the thought of mind to go on YouTube and just teach himself. And it's just crazy how much access kids have now, which obviously can be a double-edged sword depending on what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But I definitely understand what you're talking about when it comes to seeing black people creating content that you don't usually see. Right. Because I love playing video games, and it's the same thing. Like, I don't see a ton of black creators creating video game content, or at least they don't get the same access as their white counterparts. Yeah. Because every single like huge gamer is like some random white dude, you know, in his 20s. So yeah, I definitely agree. And that's the reason why I even started the blog in the first place, was to create a platform for people that don't usually get that highlight and get that attention on them,
which is really valid. And shout out to you for doing that, by the way.
No, yeah, man, I appreciate it. And like people like you, like agreeing to be a part of it, is what keeps it going in the first place. And something I've been contending with is, like, even though I don't have the biggest platform in the world, I'm just so grateful for these conversations, because I feel like they do mean something, and they're important and they're educational. Like, even talking to you, I've learned so much about you, and people don't even know this is the first time we've talked. Like, I can actually hear your voice. So it's like, that's just crazy about it, is how these conversations, like I said, can happen so organically. And yeah, they're just important. So before we get out of here, do you want to let everyone know where they can find you on social media and anything you want to promote?
Yeah, you can follow me on YouTube, Swami Sound, SWAMISOUND, the one and only. Nice. And on Instagram, at SWAMISOUND, the one and only, not Swami Sounds, none of that. It's Swami singular. Sound. Singular. You can follow me on Spotify, Swami Sound. My website, swamisound.com, the one and only.
Got to reiterate it every time.
But yeah, expect music soon. And like, really, I just can't reiterate, just like, if you're into YouTube content, like, please check my stuff out.
Yeah, man. And I'll definitely include links when I post the episode, everything, so people have, you know, immediate access to it.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course, man.
Yeah. What else do I? I don't know.
Put you on the spot.
Email, like, artists, artist producers, whoever, you can email me at music.swamisound@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from anybody. Definitely down for a conversation. Mm-hmm. And like, if you like this conversation, like, I can have more of those. Just, yeah, let me know. Hit me up.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, man, I just want to say once again, thank you so much. This was, this exceeded my expectations, obviously. Like I said, this is the first time we've ever talked, so right. Conversations can go left sometimes when you don't know.
Right. I'm just a bad texter.
No, it's no offense taken at all. I totally get it. And I prefer to talk, you know, like this, as opposed to texting or email, because it's kind of easier to have that back and forth. So yeah, man, I appreciate you. Like I said, I just see myself in you. That makes me just feel like validated as this black kid that was like ostracized so much. And yeah, what you're doing is just so cool. And I think you're really talented, man. I'm just really, really excited for you.
Thank you.
Yeah. And you're definitely welcome to come back on anytime. We can talk about new music down the road or whatever you have going on.
I'm with it.
Awesome, man. All right. Well, once again, thank you guys for listening. And you can follow me on Beyond the Sound at BYDTHESOUND. And I think that's it for now. And we will see you next week.
Thanks for having me.
See you, man.
Peace, y'all.